This download is the only extract the BBC has of this edition of Desert Island Discs. The presenter was Roy Plumley.
Terry, how well do you think you could face solitude?
Oh, I couldn't. Of course, I'd have to now. I'm stuck on this island, but I like arguing. I like discussing. I'm not very nice to live with sometimes. And if I'm going to be stuck with myself on this desert island, it's a bit of a job.
Apart from solitude, is there anything in the situation of being a desert island castaway that would frighten you?
Yeah. Oh, yes, because I don't mind fighting a lion. I'll have a go with a lion. But, you see, my mother, when I was a kid, if there was a mouse or anything, oh, quick, there's a mouse, quick! And it's something deep inside me. Anything that runs quickly frightens the life out of me. So I would be petrified of the spiders and the quick darting things.
Do you have a religious faith that would help in isolation?
Yes, I have. Very strong Church of England. Mm-hmm. I couldn't just live there on my own and think of me as the only person.
Is music important to you?
It's important as a background, and also in the right time and the right mood, music and records of all description excite me and give me something which nothing else can give.
What's the first one you've chosen?
The first one is Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty, the Grand Pas de Deux.
Why do you choose that?
Well, my wife is a ballet dancer, very good ballet dancer, and she taught me how to enjoy ballet music. Not to the full yet, I'm still trying, and my daughter is 7, my oldest daughter. She's unfortunately a bit like me, and very often we clear the room and she puts on our little ballet dress and we do the pas de deux. We don't dance very well. She has very good lessons, but I know how it should feel, and we look into each other's eyes and we dance around that room as if we were the same height and as if we really could dance, and we dance the grand pas de deux.
Well, Terry, you're in the Brian Rick's team at the Whitehall Theatre.
Yes. The actual reason I got into it, the reason why he wanted me, he spotted something. Again, somebody saw something in me. I was doing a small part in one of his television plays. I wasn't actually at the Whitehall, and the cameras broke down for 3/4 of an hour, and somebody had to fill in. And they asked me after about 5 minutes, and I went on. It wasn't very difficult, because it was an audience who'd come to see a farce. They knew there was a panic on, and suddenly this bod pushed himself forward and chatted and giggled and roared away for 3/4 of an hour. And Brian thought it was marvellous. He said, "Now I'd like you to do some more with us," which led to a bigger part on television, and then eventually to actually joining One for the Pot, you see.
Mm-hmm. And when did your next television break come?
Well, I was doing a part in one of Vernon Sylvain's farces on the television, and one of the bosses saw it on television, a new boss, and another new boss said that this man has promise. And I thought, here we go again. And he said, "We ought to be in a television series." And I didn't say any more. I said, "Oh yes." And he said, "We've got a chap called Hugh Lloyd." I said, "Good heavens!" Because I've been working with him.
Where?
In summer shows. You see? He said, "He's been doing awfully well in Hancock and lots of other programmes. Would you like to work?" And I said, "Marvellous! Who's going to write it?" They said. That's the first question everybody asks when you get on television.
Mm.
And I said, "Well, I met John Chapman at the Whitehall. He was in one of the farces. And he might be willing to." And John wrote a synopsis. They accepted it. And he's written 61 of them.
Yes. Hugh and I?
Yeah.
How many years has it been running now?
4 years.
And very successfully. How much of your own character do you think John Chapman puts in this?
Just a bit too much. He's frightening the way he knows me. Because I must say, please let me say, it blows me up a little. I'm not quite as bad, believe it or not, as I sometimes appear. But sometimes I have to do things to Hugh, and I have to be crafty with him, and afterwards I think, I hope, really and truly, I'm not that bad. Maybe, as I'm conscious of it, maybe I won't be. Maybe I'll cut it off. Maybe I'll stop myself becoming like that.
Yeah. Now, you and Hugh work together outside television. You do summer shows together.
Yes, we do summer shows, pantomimes. We do a lot of work together, and also a lot of work apart. Mm-hmm. It's essential that we work apart, because we don't want just to go together. We've got things we must do on our own.
Yeah. Recently, you've done some solo television shows.
Yes, on BBC Two. They repeated on one. They didn't go down too badly, quite well.
Terry, your career is unusual in the number of times you've been up and down. How do you account for this?
Because I make mistakes. I'm not ashamed to say I make hideous mistakes, and I'll go on making them. I'd rather make mistakes and be a bit mad occasionally than be staid and safe. Mm-hmm. Because when you've made a mistake and you go down, there's always that thrill of being able to pay the mortgage off after a few months.
What's your big ambition?
To learn enough to feel that I'm almost a star when I'm, say, 65, when I'm not ashamed of taking the money anymore. And I think, well, I've learnt it, and I think I'll have that much money, and I'll say, we'll be honoured to pay it.
I don't suppose it'd ever come to that.
In what? In films and
musicals? Comedy acting. I think I'll have to be a comedy actor, but if it so happened that I went into musicals, Rex Harrison did, suddenly he went into My Fair Lady, what could happen in 20 years' time with me playing an old man, I don't mind if it's 20 years' time, as long as one day I could be half as good as that.